I think I see something.
Buzz, I don't think I can hold you up much.
Whoa!
What in tarnation is transpiring out here?
Uh-oh, Mr. Philpott!
Well, of course it is. Who else did you expect to be in me own garage, I ask you?
Please don't hurt us, Mr. Philpott.
Purchase? Oh, now, what do you take me for? And on Christmas Eve of all nights. Well, what are you waiting for? Get on in here before you catch your deaths of penomia.
Gosh, Buzz, look!
Oh, my gosh! Mr. Philpott's, what happened to this place?
Look at all those flashing green and red lights!
Are they part of some new machine you're going to use to try to take over the world?
Again?
Oh, heavens to Betsy, no, boys. I just spruced up the place a bit for the holidays.
Oh, you gotta admit, Buzz, it looks pretty Christmassy.
It sure does. But I know Philpott's, and he's always got some scheme up his sleeve.
Oh, it ain't what you think. Now, you know how those bums, Mr. Hitler and Mr. Hirohito...
Don't forget that Italian moose...
Mussolini. Yeah, he's a bad un, too. Now, you know how these idiots is causing a world of troubles all over the planet?
You sure got that right.
Now, one of the reasons that they can be such a bother is the big, strong armies that they got.
The USA has the greatest army ever.
Oh, true, true. But our boys could always do with a helping hand, I figure. And you know how we used my special Henry Ford Model Z travel-mobile to travel all over the galaxy to places like Mars and Saturn, and then how them aliens was always bragging how they got the best armies and can beat anybody's army?
Yeah.
Now, I got to thinking. Them Axis guys always says the same thing. Now, I figured we'd bring them all together and see who really is the strongest.
You brought all their armies from outer space here with your machine?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. I just brought their smartest scientists here. Now, Buzz and Billy, I'd like yours to meet Satelloid the Saturnite.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
The smartest scientist from Saturn is a girl?
Well, it is kind of a backwards planet.
Girls aren't smart enough to do science.
Or even math.
Well, and that's why I brought down her male supervisor, Sturmdrong the Saturnite.
I'm from Saturn, the smartest planet in the solar system.
If you're so smart, how come you gotta work with girls?
Come now, young man. Even here on your Earth, you have learned that when necessary, women could work in factories when the men are needed for more important tasks.
Gosh, I didn't think of that.
Yes, indeed. A woman is perfectly capable of doing a man's job, just not as well, and so long as she has proper male supervision.
But what job are these two doing on our planet?
We are here to bring our mighty armies to Earth to crush your Hitler.
He ain't my Hitler.
We will crush him. His army will bow to us.
Oh, now who can that be? Why, Mrs. Edsel, to what does I owe the pleasures of your company on this Christmas Eve?
Oh, I just wanted to make sure that Billy Olander and my boy Buzz weren't bothering you, as they tend to do.
Oh, those darling boys are never a trouble at all.
Say, what's with all the lights, Philpott's? Throwing a Christmas party?
Oh, who's that behind you? Tug Jones. Why do you always have to be sticking your bulky beak into my business?
I guess because your business is always causing trouble for everyone else, Philpott's.
Oh, come on. Get inside. It's Christmas Eve.
He's brought a Saturnite scientist and his lady assistant.
Uh-oh. What are you up to, Philpott's?
Oh, don't get your bustle in a tussle, Jones.
Yes, we are here to help you.
Your Mr. Philpott's has convinced us to bring our armies to Earth. We will smash Hitler and his puny army with science.
You're crazy, Philpott's. You can't team up with just anyone in the universe just because you want to win a war. You have to fight alongside people who share your values. Elsewise, what are you fighting for? To win? The Nazis are fighting to win. We need a higher cause than that.
Oh, really? Well, what about the Ruskies? They're on our side, and they deny the Almighty.
They may call themselves godless communists, and maybe they are. But with Hitler knocking on the Kremlin gates, I bet even Joe Stalin says his prayers when he goes to bed.
We will destroy Hitler, then get rid of Stalin. Then your world will be at peace under the rule of our iron fist.
See, like I said, they're on our side. What?
We will rule the Earth with our iron fist.
east.
Ixnay on the Istvay and the Ulri of the Earth A.
What did he say? What kind of language is that?
It must be Saturnite. It sounds un-American to me. Philpotts, what have you done this time?
Well, that wasn't part of the bargain.
It is now.
They must not stop our evil plan. I will tie them up with my mighty Saturnite rope of science.
She's shooting ropes from her hands.
These science ropes are all over me. I can't move. They've got me all tied up.
They've got us all tied up.
Oh, this is all my fault.
You got that right, Philpotts.
Now that you cannot stop us, we will use your Model Z machine to bring all of our armies here to take over the Earth. And there's nothing you can do to stop us.
They've gone into the next room. I've got an idea. Mom, what time is it?
Oh, I'm tied up. I can't see my watch.
I can't see mine either, but you can see it from there.
What time does it say?
It's well past your bedtime, boys. Why, it's almost midnight.
Almost midnight. That's perfect. It's almost Christmas. Now, Billy, help me push my shoes off with your feet.
Okay, Buzz.
Great. Now help me take my socks off.
Buzz, taking your shoes and socks off in someone else's home? I raised you better than that.
Well, you can't speak to me now, Mom. Your hands are tied. But we can't let being tied up stop us. First, I'm going to pick up my sock in my mouth.
Grr. Now I'm going to hop over here.
Where's he going? Buzz, what are you doing?
He's going over to the fireplace with a sock in his mouth. I can't imagine why he would do such a thing.
Well, he must be hopping mad.
I have returned. Our work on your machine is done. Now you pathetic humans are in for a surprise.
And so are you.
What's that noise?
The chimney falling apart. Danger! Danger!
What is happening to the chimney?
The thing that happens to chimneys every Christmas Eve.
Santa!
I knew you'd come if I hung my stocking by the chimney with care.
You have been a good little boy, Buzz Edsel, for the most part. And Billy Olander, but why are you here all tied up when you should be in bed asleep like all little good boys and girls?
It's them, Santa. They've been very naughty little boy and girl aliens.
Who are you, fat man?
Well, that is naughty.
This is the one and only Santa Claus.
But don't be ridiculous. Santa Claus is a myth.
There's no such thing as Santa.
No such thing as Santa. Well, that cures it. It's a lump of coal for each of you.
Oh, no. Coal. A Saturnite's one weakness. I can't breathe.
That's one down.
The good old power of American coal.
There's still one alien left. Get him, Santa.
Stay back.
Oh, he's got a gun.
That's no normal gun. That's some kind of Saturnite zap ray gun.
He's gonna shoot Santa.
Not if I can help it. Get thee behind me, Santa.
Philpotts. Philpotts. He took the blast intended for Santa.
Who shall I shoot next?
You're never going to use that gun on anyone ever again.
Golly, Santa, you conked him right on the noggin with that chunk of American coal and knocked him out. Oh, with an arm like that, you should pitch for the Detroit Tigers.
I couldn't do that, Buzz. I'm far too busy making toys for all the good boys and girls of America.
But at least we won't be seeing any more aliens for a while.
That's right, Buzz. America is no place for aliens.
Oh, but you're all still tied up. Well, here's a little Christmas magic to unwrap you.
Well, that's better. I'm glad those Saturnite ropes of science are finally off of us.
How is poor Mr. Philpotts?
Oh, I'm a writer, but I've learned a valuable lesson tonight.
Oh, yeah? What's that, Philpotts?
Why, I've learned the value of good old all-American coal. And that you can't always trust science.
That's right. And now I've got to go. Merry Christmas, everybody! Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, Santa!
Merry Christmas, Santa!
Merry Christmas, dear Santa!
Ho, 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 indeed. Well done, Mr. Claus. It is I, Henry Ford, again, and I hope you all noted how Santa used good, clean, safe coal to save the day and protect our heroes, just as so many fathers across this great land use Fordson Coal Company coal to protect and warm their families in this holiday season. Our story tonight also mentioned the great conflict in which we are embroiled now in Europe and the Pacific, and I want to ensure the children at home that I'm confident this war will soon end peacefully. After all, Chancellor Hitler wrote compliments about me in that little book of his, and so we must know that he can be reasonable. From everyone at the Ford Motor Company of Dearborn, Michigan, and the Fordson Coal Company, this is Henry Ford wishing you a very, very Merry Christmas, and God bless us, everyone.
Tonight's broadcast radio theater players and the production of Buzz Edsel's Mighty Adventures featured voice portrayals by Paul Berg, Brad Friedman, and Desi Doyen. Tonight's radio plays were written by Paul Berg. On behalf of the broadcast radio theater players and the Henry Ford Science Fiction Theater of the Air, I bid you adieu and happy holidays to all. Until we meet again, find me on the Twitters at TheBradBlog or BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman. Good night, America.
$500 reward to you for helping us find a new free radio studio location. We need something urgently. We are gone out of here on the 20th. Need about 200 square feet of location. We can build this little shack. We can use someone's shed, a closet perhaps. We do need a bathroom. We need electricity, and we can wire that in as well. Again, $500 to the person that finds such a location. We need it for about a year. Contact us at frsc@freakradio.org. Online, freakradio.org. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And the $500 goes to you.
Simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Social significance, all other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncope. there's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, the Christmas Eve version. I'm Robert Norris, and of course you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz it is. And you can't call into the show because while I'm able to make it at home, I'm making it before airtime, so if you want to comment on it, you leave a message for me and I will get back to you by phone, or if you want to comment on it for public consumption, then I will play that on the next show, which will be Sunday. Today, of course, is Thursday the 24th. It'll be Sunday the 27th in the morning at 9:30 is when it begins and goes until around 1 or later. Recently, it's been later. We'd like to have a call-in situation restored. That probably will require the arrival of a studio. And right now we are studioless. $500 reward is still waiting for anyone who has ideas that lead to a studio space. I didn't make the last Free Radio meeting myself, but I understand that there are schemes afoot, possibilities. But if you'd like to continue to hear this show and other shows on Free Radio, get in touch at 423-4833 with any suggestions about places where we can set up a studio. And a studio is a small space. We're not talking about a studio apartment. We're talking about like a 10 by 10 space, access to electricity, internet, hopefully out of the rain. And it would be nice to have a bathroom or at least a porta potty access, though we perhaps could supply that if all else was failing. And again, the number to call if you have any ideas or you want to support this in any way, or you have comments, as I said before, about the show or about new ideas that you think, new possibilities for being on the show, things, and perhaps you want to be on the show yourself, 423-4833. If you'd like to be a part of Free Radio, contact Free Radio via the website, which is freakradio.org. The show will also archive at the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's at huffsantacruz.org, as all of you regular listeners already know. HuffSantaCruz.org, and just go to the name of the show, which is, again, not a great tongue twister, but perhaps a small one, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Combination of bathrobe for the kind of costume I wear at homeless protests, both ironic and, kind of a black humor in dramatizing the situation for homeless folks who have to be outside in the El Nino weather and also face criminalization at night if they are, as they go to bed, because it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night, according to the city's 6.36010A ordinance. And I will be having a report on that as well. And got a lot of interesting stuff coming up in the show. I had a long interview today with Tristia Bauman, National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, a senior lawyer, and also a person seems to be pretty interested in the issue of making it no longer a crime to be unhoused outside, to be homeless, as some would say. And I'm going to be playing the first half of that interview shortly, actually at about 6:30, as best as I can gauge the time. And there's also going to be some, I actually will begin with homeless memorial audio. That is to say, I was at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Coral Street complex, the fenced in, got to have your ID card to get in area there. We actually were able to get in on Tuesday during the memorial without ID cards. And I was frankly a little nervous about that, unnecessarily so, but often you do need to have, you know, to present your credentials at the door. At least that's what I've heard from others. Though we did hear a positive account of the Paul Lee Loft from a Boulder Creek Steve, who lost his housing up in Boulder Creek and has been spending time at the Paul Lee Loft while he's looking for Section 8 housing. In fact, he's going to be doing, I believe, an analysis and expose of the difficulties of people who have Section 8 but are soon to lose it unless they can find some kind of housing, and the difficulties that that involves here in Santa Cruz County. In any case, there'll be stuff on the Homeless Memorial. There'll also be some information on, we'll skip ahead. Tuesday, the 22nd, was quite a busy day. We're going to skip ahead to the Food Not Bombs event. It wasn't planned. I just heard about it out of the blue from activist Keith McHenry. He was under the weather but still determined to go out there. There was a rather nasty description, coverage, smear, you may call it, of the Freedom Sleepers, the group that's been out at City Hall every Tuesday night and was out there again last Tuesday night, later, in fact, on that same day that I'm talking about, when you had the Homeless Memorial Service in the morning and Food Not Bombs in the afternoon, raising the issue of the right to sleep and also creating a kind of a safe sleeping sanctuary zone, which provided another safe sanctuary for tickets on Tuesday night. At least that was the report I got. I wasn't there sleeping. I was there earlier in the evening being supportive and making notes and reporting. But Keith McHenry and others, and I think we may get a phone interview or two with them, with other folks who are critics of the Sentinel's reporting, as I like to call the Sentinel, because that's how it smells to me, on the Freedom Sleepers over the last 24 weeks. It actually hasn't done virtually any reporting of it, or of the issue of homeless folks outside, or of the lack of shelter, you know, or of the, we've soon been getting reports of violence against the homeless, not to mention the hardening of attitudes produced and cheerleaded or cheerled by the staff of the city through such new initiatives as the live in an RV, get banned at night in Santa Cruz. You cannot be in your RV or even park your RV and go somewhere else unless you have a special permit, which you can't get unless you are a non-houseless person or someone who has a connection with a resident here in Santa Cruz, where the word resident does not apply to a poor person who's outside without a renting a space or owning a space. Loudon Nelson, around 1 o'clock on Saturday the 19th, and I'm talking with
O'Neill W.
And what should I call you, O'Neill or O'Neill, sure. O'Neill W?
Yes.
So, O'Neill, you and a bunch of others just emerged from one of the rooms, and I was saying, what's going on? You said, NA meeting. And I said, aha. And you thought you recognized me from elsewhere. And I'm thinking, I just wanted to ask you about NA. How's it benefiting, if it is?
It's changed my life forever. You know, I'm here by my own free will. I'm not court-ordered.
How many folks are in that situation, would you guess?
I would guess in the fellowship or this specific meeting?
This specific meeting or this specific group you're with.
I would say maybe 10-15% of them.
So the majority are just court-ordered here?
Well, I'm talking about...
I don't
want
to say just court-ordered, but they are court-ordered.
That could vary by meeting to meeting,
right.
But we're specifically talking about the newcomer right now. We're not talking about all the clean time that was in that room. But when I say 10-15%, I'm talking about the people that are maybe in their first year of recovery.
So if you take the whole population in that room, what would you say is the percentage of people who are there because they're ordered by the court, and what percentage because they've decided to keep coming on their own volition?
I would say 5% of that room was probably court ordered.
A very small percentage.
Yeah, I saw the sign-off sheets. There was only about maybe 5 or 6 of them.
So it is a popular event, or a meaningful event for a number of people who feel it's worth doing on their own.
Definitely. I mean, I first started coming September 13th of 2001, and my life has changed in miraculous ways. I haven't stayed clean the whole time, but it has affected my life for the long term as far as practicing spiritual principles in my life.
And how has it affected your relations with other folks?
Oh, man, it's been really positive results, not only from friends, but family, and then just the general public at large. I mean, you know, when you see people who work for the county, and their response to you is just like, wow, you know, you really made a turnaround. Because, I mean, I was drinking and running amok here in Santa Cruz for over 10, 15 years.
And that changed. What do you attribute the reason you were... What stresses were on you that prompted this, if it was stresses rather than simply preference?
Well, it's like what our literature talks about, you know, through in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous, and that can be a trifecta of spiritual, emotional, and economical reasons. That's what got me to come back, because you know the pain just becomes so great. And
that's pretty vague, though. What do you mean by that? You mean like you lost your housing? Somebody was abusing you in a continuing way. I mean, what specifically are you talking? If you wish to say, of course.
Yeah, that's fine. It was a partner I had that was using pot on a daily basis, drinking regularly, and I knew I couldn't surround myself with that type of environment. It was just unhealthy. Being inconsistent in the workforce too.
So, and that leads me to another question, because I'm a big fan of legalized marijuana and not criminalizing people and throwing them in jail. What's your feeling, and what do you think is the feeling of folks in your group, if there is a general feeling about criminalization of drug use or drug possession?
You know, that's an outside issue. That actually doesn't coincide with one of our traditions.
I understand. But in fact, in practice, what do you find is the case? Is there any general view, or is it just mixed?
In practicing what? Practicing the program?
No, and whether people believe that these people should be jailed for these kinds of possessions, whether it's paraphernalia or use.
Well, on a personal level, the conversations I've had with people who have double digits in the 12-step community, and that means people with over 10 years of recovery, seem to be of the liking that, hey, you know what, take away the black market, legalize it all, and people are either going to be responsible with their usage and continue their lives, or they're going to destroy themselves and find recovery, or they're just going to stay clean and stay away from it. You know, those are like the three options.
Win-win-win situation.
Yeah. You know, and in England, they're doing this in Europe, you know, where they got little shooting booths for their people.
Talk about it in Seattle, too.
Yeah, there you go. And in Seattle, and these people hit their bottoms, you know, maybe even quicker. And they get into recovery faster because it's available. And they're not being criminalized for which we consider to be a disease. You know, this is not a moral deficiency. This is a disease, and it's still, we're like in the Stone Ages when we're looking at this thing. It's like, you know, I don't really have anything else to say, but it feels like we're in the Stone Ages. I mean,
I hear you. I tend to agree with you.
And that was a brief clip from Man I Buttonholed in the Hallway outside the Project Pollinate event, which was about a week ago in the Loudon Nelson Center. Let's take a musical break and hear a little of one of my favorite groups, hopefully audible and intelligible to all you listeners, Uncle Banzai.
How many hearts have you broken? How many men have you lost? How many nights have you spoken when I couldn't get the time to cross? How many times have we stood here waiting for your prince to arrive? How many shoulders to cry on? Who should keep the dream alive? How many drinks have we shared? How many nights have been wasted? Cause you thought that there was no one there. How many times will you call me, looking for a little relief? How many nights will I wait here, smiling in disbelief? You go home to your lover, I go home to my room. You go home to discover if you've spoken to me.
That was Midas Touch from the Uncle Banzai album, Men and Women. An article that aroused some controversy some outrage among homeless activists, hit the Sentinel on Sunday under the headline, Freedom Sleepers, the Winter Chills Homeless Protest. And this has the usual slant, that you find in articles that have covered homeless protests when they happen at City Hall, and I've seen many of them at City Hall. In fact, some of the rhetoric on the article and the focus recalls the Homies for the Homeless protest of 2007, which was also at City Hall, went on for a straight week and was actually begun by housed homeless civil rights activists and carried on by homeless people themselves, which seems to be happening now to the homeless protest in front of City Hall, the Freedom Sleepers protest. It's been going on sort of once a week, at least as far as the housed segment goes. But I've been told, and I have not documented this, that every evening there is a certain contingent of people who are sleeping in front of City Hall, not on the grounds, not under the protection of the covered hallways where when it rains. In fact, one person who tried to do that a couple of weeks ago was dragged away with 12 police officers attending that abduction isn't quite the word, but in a way it was. He was taken to jail. He wasn't charged with anything. He was awakened rudely, demanded he move out into the rain, and he declined to do so. And so he was forcibly taken to jail, held, I believe, in the chair, which is the thing that is a restraining device which holds you, covering your face and the rest of your body in a solitary cell. It's a form of the solitary confinement in our own jail, which doesn't get any publicity in the Saint Anal, as we would, well, as I would expect, but you would think, I think ordinary folks might think otherwise. Anyway, this article specifically got a lot of anger from activists, and I was angry about it too. But when I read it more carefully, I see it is simply pretty much business as usual for the Saint Anal. I guess it should be greeted with anger, you know. The main point and the reason for my concern about the article, insofar as it has anything to do with, well, what in turn it distorts the reality of the situation, it omits a lot of facts and it emphasizes others. The main focus of the article is, well, at least 50% of the article is taken up with undocumented claims by the city staff who do give their names, but none of the city staff who claim, or they're claiming the specific concerns they have are noise, trash, human waste, and public exposure. There were no citations issued for any of those things. And the city staff complaining were talking about, well, they are there during the day between 8 and 5:30. And the homeless protests happened generally after 7 o'clock and ended by around 7 or 8. So they're probably talking about a different group of people if they're talking accurately at all. But this is the kind of verbiage that is used to alienate homeless, middle class people from the homeless civil rights struggle. Oh, these are filthy, dirty people, and they're not like us, and therefore we can understandably drive them away with police and criminalize them with bad laws or laws that describe them as bad. And in fact, I believe the reporter Jessica York was invited to check out the area to see if it was clean, and so was assistant city manager Scott Collins, who, instead of doing that, ran away from Keith McHenry, and when Keith shouted after him, I don't know that he was chicken shit, which Scott Collins related to me as he said, a fucking pussy, calling Scott Collins a fucking pussy. And, you know, I mention this because in getting varied accounts, I've had relatively amiable conversations with Scott Collins in the past 2 or 3 years in trying to get advance or deeper understanding of the kind of anti-homeless laws he was cooking up for the city council and proposals for the task force on public safety. Actually, the task force on public hysteria is what I called the group that was put together by the Robinson Comstock segment of the city council. I don't think Comstock was on the council at that time, but is the co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz and is sort of a strong voice, was even then. So, focusing on feces and urine when there's no citations for it, and when the city acknowledges it locks the bathrooms during the protest, and even locks them during the day. I was there on Tuesday, 2 days ago, at 3 o'clock, and I found the men's bathroom locked.
And this is the middle of the business day. It's a direct response. It has to be. I can conceive of nothing else than it being a direct response. Well, I could conceive of something else, but it seems reasonable to me to understand that it is a response to the presence of homeless people waiting to go to the protest. And the sort of the notion that these are subhuman creatures that don't have basic toiletry needs and that have to be treated as animals who are going to damage the property. And this kind of bigotry is something, well, you can understand it maybe with, you would think, with conservative residents who reinforce their property value fantasies and desires to maintain higher prices for real estate turnover or not to have poor people in their neighborhood blocking their view of the ocean. However, and merchants who are paranoid about having homeless people on the sidewalk in front, which might somehow drive away a conservative buyer or discourage a conservative buyer, or might possibly engage in some behavior that ultimately would, I don't know, frighten the horses, so to speak. But that this comes from the staff of the city is really telling to me. Of course, it's not really surprising, because it is the staff of the city that has created all this raft of homeless, the attacks on homeless people with these laws, ranging from the sleeping van, which the police department, as I understand it, in 1978 originally proposed it, to the current RVs Begone law, proposed by Rochelle Naroyan, who graduated from her position as chair of the Public Works and Transportation Commission to being on the city council, and essentially declaring homeless people non-persons, or at least non-residents, even though the federal government has recognized since the 80s their residence of Santa Cruz, even if their residence is a great, we don't have greats in Santa Cruz, those are for big cities, but, you know, even if it's a square on the sidewalk, they've got a right to put that address down and vote there, claim that's where they vote, and they can, properly demand a ballot. Let's hear a little something. I'm going to kind of snip through a few items on this show that I picked up along the way. Here's one yesterday from outside the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which we hold every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. You're invited to come on down and join the attempt to find some counter response to this kind of bigotry. And I'll be back to talk more about this Sentinel article later in the broadcast. I'm actually hoping to contact some folks by phone and get them to give their opinion. Some people were rather angry about it and have written to the Sentinel about it. That's Sentinel, if you've just tuned in, the Santa Cruz Sentinel. As I said, Sentinel, Sentinel, I think, is more truth in advertising about this paper.
In front of the Sub Rosa Cafe, and here's a bunch of folks with turkey, chicken breast, white bread, crackers, candy canes. Who wants to talk about this? Who's doing what? What's going on here?
I'm making sandwiches.
You got gloves on. You found some gloves.
Yes, and also Saturn donated some gloves to us too, so they're pretty cool.
Very sweet. But who
Beckman's
donated?
Donated the bread.
Who did?
Beckman's donated the bread.
Right on. And what about the
cookies?
Peanut butter cookies.
Chocolate chip cookies,
peanut
butter cookies.
Hey, would you like
a And we're talking with
Gregory Speed.
And
Suzanne Connolly.
And the woman with the gloves.
Marie Magruder.
And who's over here? What's your name?
Oh, Siri.
And you are?
Al Stevenson.
So that's a bunch of folks giving out food here on the sidewalk. Well, how long have you been doing this?
This is only our second feed, but we started at 1 o'clock today.
And is this, you guys have a name of a group, or is this individual?
What happened to the flyer, Alfie? Oh, it's right there on the end.
And we're looking for a flyer here. And luckily it's not raining.
Or peanut butter
cookies. Here we go. And here we have a flyer. Keep it clean, all welcome, free food, December 23rd, in front of the Sub Rosa, 1 p.m. till the food's gone. And the food is going, folks, so get over here, all the extra dishes like that come out night. So I'm afraid it's going to be too late. I am Robert. I'll give you a card. Are you guys going to do this again? Is this
yes, sir.
And the next time scheduled is?
I don't know. We haven't set a certain date, but we'll let you know.
And is there a place where people can contact you to donate food or to volunteer?
We haven't thought that far through.
Donate to my, you can contact me at my email.
There you go.
Give us your email.
SUZCONN1977@hotmail.com.
And say it again.
SUZCONN1977@hotmail.com.
So there you are. If you want to help out the keeping a clean group, contact the email you just heard. So is this your first event, everybody?
This is our second event.
And where was your first event?
Same location.
And
each event hopefully will be at the exact same location.
And is this a particularly favorite? Why this location?
Because I live right around the corner.
So this is all dependent on you and your location?
Right. I live on this. I live on.
What about
block.
Where she lives? Why don't we go where she lives?
Nah, we're gonna be right here, yeah. Where I live. I set this up out of my pocket. Yeah,
you are the man.
Bread has been donated. Cookies have been donated. Everything else is out of my pocket.
Well, that's nice.
Thank you, sir.
I imagine those who are hungry thank you.
I'm not hungry. I'm just want to feed. Yeah.
Well, apparently there's some who are. Those are the ones.
I walked around yesterday handing out flyers to homeless people and or other people. Actually contacted Food Not Bombs. They let me put a flyer on their table. And, yeah, we're just going from there.
A long-time resident yourself?
I'm from North Carolina, but, yeah, long-time resident of Santa Cruz. Yes, sir.
And
why? I met you before, years ago, actually. I used to be a downtown host.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
And what made you decide to suddenly do this?
A friend of mine set up the first feeding, and she's not here today, but I'm continuing on her mission.
And what made her decide to, you know?
I guess the kindness of her heart.
And when was this hit?
Happy holidays. You want a sandwich, brother? You want a sandwich? Right on. What kind of sandwich you want?
So we'll leave you to your sandwich.
No, we don't got no steak or lobster, but we got ham, turkey, and
I want lobster, man. Lobster. Yeah. I want it now.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking with
Gregory Speed.
Thanks, Greg.
Come on, man. Thank you.
Folks be any dumber.
Center for Homelessness and Poverty, a decades-old institution in Washington which has been monitoring civil rights issues, particularly around homeless and poor people. And she's on vacation. Or I hope you're on vacation anyway. And, you know, dealing with the heat wave back east and with her family. But she's agreed to chat with us briefly about what's been happening around civil rights for poor people, particularly as related to, well, I'm particularly interested, Tricia, in what you saw in Santa Cruz. You were here for a couple of days. You took time out from a trip to deal with a renters forum. You came east to, or west to talk about that in the Bay Area. Is that right?
That's right.
And you, go ahead.
But yes, I came out for the Housing Justice Network conference and did discuss renters' rights issues as well as criminalization issues, and it was absolutely my pleasure, and I thank you for inviting me down to Santa Cruz and giving me a sense of what is happening there as well.
Yeah, that was, I think, Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels who, contacted you. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I was glad to see you. We had, I think, was it Maria Foscarini? Do I have that right?
It's a difficult last name, Foscarina.
Thank you. She either came to town or somebody from the National Law Center came to town back in 1997 at the invitation, interestingly enough, of a woman who again has been elected mayor, Cynthia Matthews. I don't know if it was at her invitation. I think it was at our invitation, and Cynthia tolerated it. Cynthia is a longtime supporter of anti-homeless laws in the interests of the business community and conservative residents and her own rather limited, what she calls progressive priorities, which involve housing or nothing kind of thing, which is what liberal Democrats often use as their pretext for criminalizing the homeless, saying, oh, camping isn't good enough for them, so we'll make it illegal, but we want them to have housing somewhere someday, you know, beyond this horizon. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that type of message is fairly common. For example, in the justification of laws prohibiting sharing food with homeless people, cities will sometimes say, well, we're doing this for a homeless person's own good because we want to ensure that they have access to city food. And the problem, of course, with that rhetoric is when there is no effort then to provide needed housing and or needed food services, then that rhetoric is only harmful.
Yeah, and I guess, I know the Law Center has put out a lot of different studies, which I find, frankly, very encouraging insofar as they're educational about the different laws across the country around different subjects, whether it's inadequate shelter or criminalization of poor people on the streets or criminalization of street performers. I don't know if you did one on that. We've been covering that. But I'm interested in, has the National Law Center ever put anything out on the amount of money that different cities get allegedly for homeless services, and what kind of money actually reaches the poor in homeless services? I mean, I think that is, for me, it's a national scandal, and it's why we call a lot of these social service providers poverty pimps. Right. Has anything been done around that that you're aware of?
So the Law Center has not, not because we wouldn't be interested in that type of data, we absolutely would be, but we are not a research organization, so we rely very heavily on our external partners, usually attorneys at pro bono law firms, to help us with the three strategies that we do engage in, which are litigation, policy advocacy strategies, and also education and outreach. We do put forth reports that would, for example, summarize the growing body of data suggesting, well, demonstrating that providing housing is the much more effective and cost-effective measure for addressing homelessness in a given population, but we don't do the research ourselves. We would summarize and then promote the data that supports what we've been saying for a long time, which is criminalizing homelessness is an ineffective policy. That type of policy simply does not work to end homelessness. In fact, it only worsens and entrenches the problem by imposing new barriers to a homeless person's ability to become self-sufficient. A criminal conviction can preclude the availability of employment, of housing in the private market. It can also threaten someone's ability to ever receive even limited federal housing subsidies. And in some circumstances, depending on the type of conviction, it also could limit someone's access to financial aid for additional education. It just creates a worse problem. In addition to it being extremely expensive, criminalization policies are around 2 to 3 times more expensive than even housing interventions. So I just want to, you know, really underscore that the cost of sending a police officer out to a homeless person, citing that person, booking that person, putting them into the criminal justice system only temporarily, to dump them out onto the same streets with the same lack of shelter and housing options, only now with criminal records and fines that will make it that much more difficult for them to escape their homelessness. There is a real cost, and it's a cost to the taxpayers. And when we look at interventions that do work, which is a housing first model where you simply provide housing and any necessary supportive services to allow someone to become stable and self-sufficient in housing, you not only see massive reductions in visible homelessness, and Salt Lake City is an example of one where, since they implemented their Housing First programming starting in 2005, they've now experienced a roughly 75% reduction in chronic homelessness.
Let me interrupt you briefly, Tricia, because you're really talking to the converted, I think, not just me, but many people in the audience. And the harder questions I tend to ask are things like, you know, you say, you know, well, we're not a research organization at the National Law Center, but you can also solicit different research. You can choose to focus on different areas. And the question I asked you a few moments ago, which is, have you sought, or it really could be rephrased, is have you sought out any indication of whether all these wonderful, you know, grants that cities are getting is actually getting to poor people? This, I'm sure, is being followed by local homeless civil rights groups in different places. Critics are claiming that, you know, when Fresno gets a huge grant of money from the government and then spends its money instead on the police force clearing away homeless encampments and talking about housing or funding a study of a 10-year plan to end homelessness, this is something that isn't just limited to Fresno and other, you know, dark areas claiming to be light areas. So while I like, you know, I mean, even you'll get people, get Cynthia Matthews, our mayor, to agree, oh, yeah, housing first, great idea. But when it that doesn't change her criminalization policies or
the diversion of funding into the policing area. So I'm particularly pissed when I hear of homeless grants being used in that way. I would like to see it systematically exposed on a national basis, and I believe the National Law Center, if it hasn't already done so, could do such a thing with a study, not by researching, but by just gathering the research done by other groups, which I think you do anyway on other issues. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong that we do this type of research, and I agree that that would be a really interesting and useful research area, and something that even if we're not the ones conducting the research ourselves, we could promote a research project of that type and then report out on what we find. You know, with respect to our projects that get at the cost of criminalization and the amount that's being wasted by governments, we're not hitting on the precise issue that you're raising. For example, when a HUD grant comes through, how much of that HUD money is actually benefiting the life of a person who is forced to live outside versus supporting an infrastructure and or supporting a new study that may not actually translate into a real-life difference. That's not something we've looked at. I love that idea, though, and I think it's something that we certainly can look at. But I can tell you that we are looking at now, and in fact, the timeliness of this interview is striking. Just this morning, I had a call with a group of statisticians that will be conducting some research for us to really help us get at one of the issues that was raised when I was in Santa Cruz, and that is when you can identify that there are generalized cost savings to the taxpayers but are unable to make the case to an individual government, here is how you should be spending your money differently. It seems that we really need to drill down on those specifics, and part of that would require an analysis of the recent cost data to see what methodology has been most effective for demonstrating that spending money on the criminal justice system does not help anyone on the ground, and that diverting money differently would achieve the outcome that all constituents are lobbying their lawmakers for, and that is reduce visible homelessness.
We're talking with Tricia Bauman of the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, and she's taking time away from her own personal life. Thanks, Tricia, for doing that, by the way. Are policies changing nationwide because of these minuscule HUD changes, Housing and Urban Development, to say that 2 points out of 100 will give you, we're counting whether we will, choose this grant or that grant for this city or that city. If you decriminalize, we'll give you 2 points out of 100, or if you've got, positive measures, we'll do that. Initially when I heard that the HUD was going to make some changes in this, we all thought, we're hitting them in the pocket, but it doesn't look like a very hard hit. Has that, do you think, resulted in any meaningful changes in cities across the country that you've seen, or in any cities, regarding criminalization policies?
Well, so far, let me put it this way. I think it's too early to know, and while I do absolutely think it's a hit, I agree that it's not a knockout and that this alone wouldn't be sufficient to either end criminalization practices or really get the federal government to begin funneling its significant amount of federal resources toward those communities that are engaging in strategies that do work to help homeless people become housed.
Tricia, has it actually had any impact on any cities that you know of?
So far, the HUD NOFA was due November 20th. And what we know at the Law Center is just what we're told by people on the ground. And as you can imagine, more often than not, we are contacted by communities with concerns about things going wrong, less often contacted by communities who say we've made X, Y, and Z changes as a result of this HUD NOFA question. What we will be doing to follow up is request copies, since it's all public record, request copies of the various HUD NOFAs to see in fact, what communities are reporting to HUD as to their changes, and then compare that with the information that we have.
But as of now, as far as you know, you don't have any communities that have indicated to you that there's been any kind of, we better take a step back from any of these criminalization things.
What I can say is that we haven't, you know, the short answer to that is no, but it's to say no and to walk away with that answer would be to misunderstand. The more nuanced and true answer is that we haven't looked at that yet. It's premature because the applications were only recently submitted, and we're not likely, again, to hear from communities that have engaged in changes pursuant to the NOFA question. So
that's fair enough. But let me ask you then about the other significant element that seems to have entered the picture. We still have you there?
Yes.
Good. Sorry. And that is the Department of Justice Statement of Interest in the Bell versus Boise lawsuit, longstanding since, I think, 2009, on behalf of homeless people, not just to end criminalization, but to seek restitution for the damage done to homeless people. You know, around sleeping bans and the law that criminal, I guess it's specifically law in Boise, Idaho, that criminalizes sleeping. I don't think I have the law exactly, you know, in my mind. But that came out, I guess, in August, although the case itself was sent back to the judge, and the judge said, we're still going to uphold the dismissal of this whole thing, the same judge that originally didn't want to look at it or turned it away. Some cities have apparently responded out of concern of liability. Vancouver, Washington, I think some cities in Southern California. Any other cities that you know of have stepped back recently or in the last 6 months in fear of a Department of Justice, maybe even a lawsuit, not just an amicus brief or a statement of interest? And by the way, what's the difference between a statement of interest and an amicus brief? You're the attorney here.
Sure. Well, you hit on a couple of different things. So the difference between an amicus brief and a statement of interest brief really doesn't exist except for in name. The Department of Justice calls its briefs that would otherwise be termed amicus brief, statement of interest brief. So it functions very much the same way, and it doesn't have binding force of law, but it is, of course, highly influential. The federal government, not just through the recent brief in the Bell v. Boise case, but through a series of other actions, has made it very clear that fighting the criminalization of homelessness, often which occurs at the local level through their financial incentives and through investigations as to civil rights violations that may be made pursuant to DOJ complaints, and also taking an interest in litigation, are all strategies that the feds are ready and willing to employ, and that's a very positive thing. How many communities have responded? I think we need to look at what it means to be responsive to the DOJ brief, and also put it into the context of another really important legal decision from the Supreme Court this summer in Reed, which has resulted in the invalidation of a number of panhandling ordinances across the country. Since panhandling ordinances so frequently are the laws that are turned to remove homeless people from public spaces. So between those two things, what we are seeing are a number of communities either issue moratoriums on arrests of people for engaging in sleeping or panhandling, but they have not actually repealed the law. Instead, it's just a kind of press and pause while they do some additional investigation. There are some places, and you cited one in Vancouver, Washington, that has amended the law. I would just be cautious, though, about, even though it is an outcome, I don't know how positive a change it is for the life of a homeless person, since it does require that someone strike their camp. So even though there is, you know, a period of time each night that someone is allowed to sleep in a public space without being threatened with arrest, as a former public defender, I can tell you what that means is that you perhaps have a defense if the police decide to go ahead and arrest somebody for not having struck their camp at 6:01 and does moving all of your things around and waiting again until you're lawfully able to put your belongings down and lay your head, is that a positive outcome? I certainly don't think it goes far enough to address the constitutional concerns, and that's not what I would be lobbying for as positive change in other communities, but it is an outcome. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of things that have both, you know, bright and dark shades to it. But it seems that in the decriminalization world, the momentum is really building, and we are approaching a point where we're going to start seeing a lot of positive changes. But I think that litigation is a really key tool for inspiring that litigation and that type of policy change. And I just wanted to point out with the Bell v. Boise case, just so that we're all clear on what happened there. The statement of interest brief was filed, and pretty shortly after that, the judge, without reaching the merits of the decision, so he did not rule on the constitutionality of the law and instead found that the remaining plaintiffs didn't have standing to even challenge the law. So that case was dismissed, and that decision on standing, which is a technical issue, is being appealed to the Ninth Circuit. So we're still a ways away from reaching the actual constitutionality question.
And the actual practice of the Boise Police Department is, in fact, to stop arresting homeless people, or that's just their fig leaf?
Yes.
I mean, do we know what their actual practice on the ground at the moment is? Have they changed?
Yeah, they are enforcing a law that makes it illegal to sleep and camp outside, and they continue to do so. And it seems that their actions, as well as their...
I mean, even though the they claim in their defense, which they pressed to the court, that not just jurisdiction, but they also had stopped the actual practice of arresting people, and therefore, in effect, there was no legitimate issue being raised because there were no people's rights being violated. But you're saying that, no, they are continuing to do those violations as far as you understand it.
That's right. They're continuing to make arrests. It's certainly our position and the position of the federal government that enforcement of those laws amount to constitutional rights violations. The city, of course, is arguing the other side. So they, of course, would not say we're continuing to violate people's rights. They think they're within their rights to enforce those laws. But we feel fairly confident that they will ultimately be proven wrong.
And they don't claim that they stopped enforcing, or they just claim that they are enforcing, but that's legal.
They continue to do it, and they say that they're justified in doing it.
Now, another question around this, which came up for me when I was looking at the court decision, the higher court decision, was that the U.S., because some have said the U.S., a novel behavior by the Department of Justice to weigh in on this case. But I'm also noting, in a footnote, that the U.S. weighed in with an amicus curiae brief in Joyce versus City and County of San Francisco back in 1996, and also in the Tobe versus City of Santa Ana in 1994. I was involved in supporting homeless rights back in those days, around at least the second case. And I'm wondering, we were all sort of, saying, whoopee, whoopee, the Department of Justice has weighed in. But then I found this older reference, and I thought, well, whoopee, whoopee, they weighed in 20 years ago and it didn't make any difference.
And we will have more of that interview on Sunday, the 27th. Try to play it around 10 o'clock in the morning. The show starts at 9:30 and runs until after 1 o'clock, often longer if I have more that I need to broadcast, which I may well have on Sunday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org on your computer. And the call-in number, not to the station while we're here now broadcasting to you, because this is a pre-recorded show, but if you want to comment on anything, I will get back to you and or I will play what you'd like, what you say, on the air during the next show. And the call-in number there is 423-4833, in the sense it's more of a message line than a call-in, but it is also sort of a de facto delayed call-in line. Now we're going to take a brief seasonal break, a little Christmassy spirit for all you Christmas fans or Christmas haters, it's Stan Freberg's Green Christmas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Bah, humbug, everybody.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Well, we will come to order, if you please. Are all the advertising people represented here?
Everyone except amalgamated cheese.
Well, if they're not here for the Christmas pitch, I can't help them find new ways of tying their product into Christmas. That's why I'm chairman of this board. Let's hear it for me.
Hear, hear, hear!
All right, Abercrombie, what are your people up to?
Oh, same thing as every year. 50,000 billboards showing Santa Claus pausing to refresh himself with our product.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the public has come to expect that.
That's
and,
right. It's become tradition.
Fine, fine. You there, Crass. I suppose your company's running the usual magazine ad showing cartons of your cigarettes peeking out of the top of Santa's sack?
Better than that. This year we have him smoking one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Got Santa a little more rugged, too. Both sleeves rolled up and a tattoo on each arm. One of them says, Merry Christmas.
Well, what does the other one say?
Less tars.
Great stuff.
But Mr. Scrooge.
Well, who are you?
Bob Cratchit, sir. I've got a little spice company over in East Orange, New Jersey. Do I have to tie my product into Christmas?
What do you mean?
Well, I was just going to send cards out showing the three wise men following the star of Bethlehem.
I get it. And they're bearing your spices. No, that's perfect.
No product in it. I was just going to say, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Period.
Well, that's a peculiar slogan.
Old hat, Cratchit. That went out with button shoes. You're a businessman. Christmas is something to take advantage of. A red and green bandwagon to jump on. A sentimental shot in the arm for sales. Listen.
Get the halls with advertising, fa la 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 la. Wise and the enterprising, fa la 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 la. The fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Four bars of soap,
three cans of tea,
two breakfast foods, and some toothpaste on a pear tree. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
Five tubeless tires.
Four quarts of gin,
three cigars,
two cigarettes, and some hair tonic on a pear tree. Chestnuts roasting.
Say, Mother, as sure as there's an X in Christmas, you can be sure those are Tiny Tim chestnuts roasting. Tiny Tim chestnuts are full-bodied, longer-lasting. This visible shell protects the nut. Now with XK29 added for people who can't roast after every meal.
Tiny Tim, chestnuts all the way.
Tiny Tims roast hot like a chestnut hot. And they are mild.
Get the halls with advertising, fa la 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 la. Tis the time for merchandising, fa la 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 la. Profit never needs a reason, fa la 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 la. Get the money, it's the season, fa la 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 la.
Words to live by, Cratchit.
Ah, for you, maybe. Can't you just wish someone a Merry Christmas for the pure joy of doing it?
Why? What's the percentage in that? Let me show you how to make Christmas work for you.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And please buy our beer.
There you go, Cratchit. That's Christmas with a purpose.
I know, but wait a minute. Don't you guys make enough profit the other 11 months? Christmas comes but once a year.
Funny thing you should bring that up. That's exactly the point I was about to make. Hit it, boys. Christmas comes but once a year, so you better make hay while the snow is falling. Oh, that's opportunity calling you.
Jingle bells, rub your hands, December's here. What a wonderful time to be glad and merry.
Just sew your mercenary toe.
Buy a man and show all the toys, show all the toys up on the shelf.
But just make sure that you get a plug in for yourself.
but Christmas comes but once a year, so you better cash in while the spirit lingers. It's slipping through your fingers, boy. But don't you realize Christmas can be such a monetary joy?
Well, I guess you fellas will never change.
Why should we? Christmas has two S's in it, and they're both dollar signs.
Yeah, but they weren't there to begin with.
Huh?
The people keep hoping you'll remember, but you never do.
Remember what?
Whose birthday we're celebrating.
Well, don't get me wrong. The story of Christmas and its simplicity is a good thing. I buy that. It's just that we know a good thing when we see it.
But don't you realize Christmas has a significance, a meaning?
A sales curve. Wake up, Cratchit. It's later than you think.
I know, Mr. Scrooge. I know.
On the first day of Christmas, the advertising's there. With newspaper ads,
billboards too,
business Christmas cards,
and commercials on a pear tree.
Here jingles, there jingles all the way.
Dashing through the snow in a 50-foot coupe, o'er the fields we go, selling all the way. It's the hunt with advertising, but it's the compromising. La 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 la.
And Stan Freberg's Green Christmas is over 50 years old, but still an old favorite for some of us. I'm now going to turn to the homeless memorial, which happened 2 days ago and got coverage on page 2, I think it was, maybe page 4 of the St. Anal. The St. Anal reporter, Dan, was there snapping shots of folks. And this is an occasion when little candles are lit for homeless people. They're little flags with the names of the dead people who died that year. I think there were 38 of them this year, maybe 39, not sure. And their names are written on the flags, and on the wall are lists of people who've died in previous years. And this happens all in the dining room of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, where normally the only people who can eat there are those who are in the programs, in a significant change from the previous open meal service that they used to have prior to June, when the claim is that they ran out of money, which I find it really hard to credit, and I haven't been able to. I haven't had a real dialogue with interim executive director Phil Kramer on this issue, though I hope to do that one of these years, maybe even one of these days. In any case, I went to the memorial, and it's difficult to hear audio, and I feel rather embarrassed at because of the last show's really horrible audio for much of the forum that you heard Tristia Bauman, or maybe you didn't hear, but Tristia Bauman, Robert Aguirre, and Keith McHenry spoke at a couple Sundays ago at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little of this, and the reason I'm going to play it, even though the sound is bad, is because this is the only time until they release the names that you're actually going to be able to hear the names of the homeless dead or even get a list of them to read. I spoke afterward with Homeless Persons Health Project worker Matt Nathanson, who otherwise has gotten a pretty good write-up or report of his accessibility and his helpfulness from homeless folks I've talked to. People have often been critical of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, of Letitia Schwartz, of Monica Martinez, of Jan and Thomas. I haven't heard much about Phil Kramer one way or the other yet. Former directors, most of these folks. But nothing bad about Matt Nathanson that I recall. But when I went up to him on this particular occasion 2 days ago and said, hey, I'd like to get a list of the names of the homeless dead and their ages, he said, well, you know, we did that in the past, but we don't want to offend the relatives because it's considered a shame for them to be homeless.
And I had a, well, I didn't really have a hard time holding down my gorge, because in terms of when bureaucrats come up with these pander to commonly held prejudices and myths, it's no real surprise. But it is a surprise that someone like Matt would actually credit this. I guess he's trying to accommodate what he feels are the concerns of relatives, that the names of people who've died not be released. Though it seemed to me that the relatives, maybe they're afraid they bear a responsibility. Maybe they feel guilty. Maybe the Homeless Persons Health Project feels guilty because they aren't giving them enough help. In any case, the idea of concealing this list, and he did say that after the new year he would consider releasing it. And I told him, it's a public record, you know, release the damn thing, and put it more gently. But so what we're going to hear now are, you're going to hear kind of in a distantly, I'm going to try to turn up the volume, and it's going to be distorted, the names of some of the homeless who've died. And I got to say, I didn't recognize the names of most of them. I don't know. I often, when I interview people, I do hear their names, and I probably have interviewed some of these folks over the years, but they come and go in my mind, although I did hear one that I remembered, Ricky Murphy, and I interviewed him at length back in 2003, and I may return to that interview to give us a sense. I think he felt he was being held unjustly in jail, and he was seeking my help, and I don't know if I was able to help him. But I talked about his story. But in any case, let's hear some of the names of the homeless dead. And first, you'll hear a speech by Phil Posner, who is a rabbi, who's also one of the founders of the Freedom Sleepers, who I've had some disagreements with lately. But the unusual thing about his speech is he actually makes references what actually might be causing the death of some of these folks. You know, and that is to say, the conditions under which they find themselves, the brutal things like the sleeping ban and other laws that criminalize being in public spaces and being in groups that could help each other. And I found that that was a refreshing change from the kind of soppy memorials that I've heard in the past. And I actually was tempted myself to speak about some issues, but I also am aware that this is a memorial. People are being remembered. And that's really what folks were, I thought, supposed to be doing. And I don't know that Phil referenced many, if any, specific homeless individuals, but I'm still glad he said what he did. Let's hear him, and let's hear some of the names of the homeless who died 20 years early on the average this year.
Hi, my name is Rabbi Posner, and I have a reading that is very popular and I hope you like it. Before I read it, I would like to say there is a possibility that we're making some progress in terms of getting rid of the ordinance. It's possible. Wouldn't it be wonderful, as Matt said so powerfully, pray for the dead, find like hell for the living, if more people, or this, at least this number of people, came out to City Hall, City Council, to help us with a long-term fight for shelter and for getting rid of an obnoxious ordinance.
Now, Phil is not being very specific about what he means by an obnoxious ordinance. One thinks perhaps he's feeling a little nervous about perhaps bringing what some may call politics into a traditional kind of, if pretty damn token, funeral service. I talk about this later with a writer from the Watsonville newspaper, the Register Pajaronian, so I'm not going to belabor it now. You'll hear my thoughts about this whole lack of services center memorial or service. And I guess I'm going to interject here that we had a meeting of the Freedom Sleepers, or those of us that are still come out in the evening, if only briefly, to support those who actually stay the night. And they're all unhoused people who stay the night. I think there was one exception. No, there was, there were no unhoused people who stayed the night at Freedom Sleeper 24, but there were, more than a dozen people who did sleep there who were unhoused, who slept on the sidewalk, and, didn't get tickets, but, you know, it was a relatively, mellow evening. I'm going to be playing a lot more about this, interviews and so forth that I usually do, probably on Sunday, maybe a little bit today. But the whole objective, at least one of the objectives that we had, was to demand an end to the criminalization of the homeless at night, so they can at least get some sleep and rest and cover up and be able to get up the next morning and not have also not have their stuff stolen at the same time, confiscated, if you will, by police, or having to leave it in an unsafe place so it gets ripped off by other people. And the original idea that Freedom Sleepers, I think, were considering doing was doing what was done up in Dignity Village and perhaps at Tent City 3, and Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, and Tent City 3 in Seattle, Washington, where campgrounds were established by violating the law. And then when the police came to remove people, people just did a shopping cart parade to another place and slept there. But we didn't have the gumption or the numbers of folks, or maybe we might say the credibility in the homeless community, or maybe there is such a wave of repression that has come down on Santa Cruz in the last couple of years with the anti-homeless laws, the Take Back Santa Cruz mentality that is now becoming acceptable in Santa Cruz among certain groups of people in power, and a lot of powers in Santa Cruz. I think of the staff of the city and merchants downtown, the police, various conservative associations, Harvey West, Santa Cruz Neighbors, who always had this antipathy toward the homeless and this desire to continue to enforce the camping ban and other such ordinances. But in the last couple of years, new ordinances have been added. Massive police enforcement and ranger enforcement from Parks and Rec has been added. And a whole mythology of the homeless as a safety hazard, without any documentation of this, has been added to this standing bigotry that has made things much worse. In any case, it's generally been the case in the past, as I've said before on the show, that homeless protests that involved intentional violations of the sleeping ban were led by homeless people themselves. I did some leading many years ago, 25 years ago, at City Hall, and was sleeping out with homeless people, but that quickly got taken over by homeless folks and by students who were then very idealistic and willing to risk jail and risk fines and risk harassment and mistreatment by the police, because that was more explicit in those days. Now, with the occasional media spotlight on the murders of African Americans and other poor people and other people of color, it's becoming a little more, police have to be a bit more dainty, particularly in Santa Cruz. That's my feeling. They have to cover themselves better. Are there any meaningful changes in policy, any changes in accountability and transparency, any changes in how certain kinds of things are used and documented, the use of force, the use of tasers, or possibility for pepper spray, bearcats, all this stuff? No, I don't see any meaningful changes at all, or any candor about how frequently and to whom and for what reasons these things are used and done. But as far as homeless protests go, homeless people in the past have picked up the, I think out of necessity and out of the realization that they'd rather be confronted together and, you know, with the media watching or potentially watching. The scent anal does everything it can not to watch. Although they were better in the past in some of their protests, perhaps because it didn't just happen once a week from a relatively few number of housed people. It was actually a smaller number of homeless people, but they were determined. They were at what was called the post office homeless table. They were there for 8 months right after the earthquake in 1989 and stayed there. And in 1996 in front of City Hall for 8 months, and Camp Paradise for a long period of time. That was an encampment led by Larry Templeton, under the Highway 1 bridge area, which had dozens of homeless people there, and a lot of community support, Homies for the Homeless in 2007, Peace Camp 2010 in 2010, all of these led by homeless people. In this situation, it's now turning into that again. The Toby Nixon, who comes from out of town, is still homeless, and he's also a free streamer homeless guy, which means he has the technology and the determination and experience to broadcast on the internet homeless encampments as they happen, and specifically to defend a homeless encampments by using the power of the media if and when the police come. And they haven't been, perhaps because of Toby's presence, too active in the last 2 or 3 weeks. They haven't been there much at all, actually. Of course, the whole grounds have been torn up by bulldozers, and the area is soaked with rain, and they have 3 security guards stalking around who are, you know, relatively benign, but they're still in uniform, and it was their actions that prompted 12 police officers to abusively take Michael Knox out into the rain 3 weeks ago. So it's no picnic there. And this is a pretty long riff, but it brings us back to the Freedom Sleepers and the latest account from Phil Posner is that the city council will be considering, let's put it this way, former Mayor Don Lane, who's now ceded the title of mayor to Cynthia Matthews, on January 4th will be deciding, presenting a proposal to Freedom Sleepers in the community, or I guess another activists, that involves reportedly abolition of the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance, right on, abolition of the blanket ban section, and abolition of the section of the camping ordinance that essentially eliminates that makes it okay to sleep outside and under a structure, but not, strangely enough, in your vehicle. So obviously it's not a principled proposal, because you would think the safest place for people to sleep would be in their vehicle, and the place where the people would be least likely to bother other people would be in their vehicle. And the only reason that I can think of that this isn't being included is because there is an attack on homeless vehicles being, RVs being parked at night anywhere in Santa Cruz, unless they belong to the privileged class of people who own or rent in Santa Cruz, or are connected with those folks, pushed by anti-homeless hypocrite, I have to call her that, Rochelle Naroyan, who's now on the city council, and I said before was previously on Public Works, which is the group that came up with this this proposal. So, but there is this claim of that a private meeting between some of the Freedom Sleepers who did not announce what they were doing to other Freedom Sleepers, and I was upset that they didn't. That included Steve Plaich and Phil Posner. They met privately, and I don't know if you'd say they signed on. Maybe they just listened to this proposal, and then they let us know about it. I tried to get this information from Micah Posner. He wouldn't give it to me. And, of course, I have heard nothing from Don Lane, even though I've emailed him twice on this issue, because, as you may remember, those of you who follow politics of this sort, Don Lane has a Facebook page when he was mayor. He still does, I imagine. And he gave a long lament about how sad the situation was for homeless people and how he had changed his mind about the sleeping bin, how it should be abolished. Now, as you heard, I think you heard Tristia Bauman say, or if you didn't hear her say it in the interview, the National Law Center attorney, she will be saying it, she has said it, and I'll be playing it next Sunday. It is in no way acceptable to simply say homeless people can sleep at night and then just sort of leave it at that. It's not just, of course, they deserve housing, but if you're going to talk about something short of housing, you have to talk about leaving them alone, allowing their property to be protected, allowing them to form groups to protect their property. At least this has been the Huff position. I think Tristia pretty much comes along with this. So the entire camping ordinance, which involves a prohibition on setting up a tent, for example, you're going to allow homeless people to sleep, but only if they don't have a tent, and they do it in the rain, and they do it they'll be able to do it night and day, through the abolition proposal, but only without any kind of a tent or structure over them, which is, of course, it's the kind of a joke that we got from the so-called Progressive City Council almost 20 years ago, back in 1999, when council member and former mayor Tim Fitzmaurice proposed that and passed a proposal that homeless people be allowed to sleep in a vehicle parked in a private driveway, but only 3 nights of every calendar month. And there was another proposal that didn't quite make it, but that was going to be proposed by the city council, that homeless people be allowed to sleep outside, but not with bedding of any kind. I mean, this is some bizarre attempt to cut a baby in half, to say we want to please the merchants, please the bigots, and yet at the same time appear compassionate to the liberals. It is, of course, ridiculous. On the other hand, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for years has been saying, at least abolish the sleeping ban portions of the camping ordinance and make it legal for people to sleep. Or actually, to put it a little differently, look at how abusive and how absurd the anti-homeless laws are. One of them even makes it a crime for people to fall asleep at night, even when they have no legal place to go. Well, now people will be allowed to fall asleep at night in the rain, but they can't set up a tent. Or they'll be able to fall asleep at night, but if they have a vehicle, they can't sleep in their vehicle. They have to get outside their vehicle and sleep outside their vehicle. So it's, I know I'm going to be accused of not being satisfied with what the Don Lane purportedly is working on proposing and what's going to be coming up with the specific language for on January 4th. And again, I'm giving you secondhand reports from Phil Posner and Steve Plaich, because neither Micah nor Don Lane have been willing to bring these matters specifically to the either to the Freedom Sleepers or to the broader community in a specific way. And some might say, well, they're trying to work behind the scenes to get to see what kind of proposals the other gutless or bigoted members of the city council on this issue are willing to go with. So that's the kind of the update. I've got not much new. You can contact Don Lane by calling 420-5020, and then you got to wait to figure out, get directed to his extension. And the same is true with Michael Posner or any of the other five clowns who are, you know, have been worse than Lane and Posner on these issues. Terrazas, Matthews, Comstock, Cynthia Chase, and Naroyan. But let's get back to the Homeless Memorial Service and hear the names of some of the folks who are down and out, in part because of these policies. But here again, first is some more of Phil Posner.
There is a beginning and death a destination. And life is a journey, from childhood to maturity, from youth to age, from innocence to awareness, and ignorance to knowing, from foolishness to discretion, and then perhaps to some wisdom, from weakness to strength, or strength to weakness, and often back again, from health to sickness, and back, we pray, to health again. From offense to forgiveness, from loneliness to love, from joy to gratitude, from pain to compassion, and grief to understanding, from fear to faith, from defeat to defeat to defeat, until looking backward or ahead, we see that victory lies not in some high place along the way, but in having made the journey, stage by stage. A sacred pilgrimage. Birth is a beginning, and death a destination, and life is a journey, a sacred pilgrimage to something, for want of better words, we call a life everlasting. Finally, gather the stars of homeless, if you wish it so. Gather the songs, and keep them so. Gather the faces of women and men who left a place to call their own. Gather for keeping years and years, and then loosen your hands, then go, and say shalom, goodbye. Let the stars and songs go. Let the faces and years go. Loosen your hands and say shalom, goodbye.
That was Rabbi Posner in a poetry reading, or memorial reading. In the audience, we have Sherry Connemal, Don Lane, Linda LeMaster, Becky Johnson.
May their memory be for a blessing.
Chris Kramer, Louise Drummond, Chief Vogel, Deputy Chief Martinez, Lieutenant Flippo, Daryl Darling, yes. Tottering up to the speaker's platform or the table to see the light candle. I imagine I see more service providers and community members than homeless community members.
Or some Adam Starlight. Adam in the last.
And you can't really hear Daryl Darling, who runs a bed and breakfast. He's also a local church person, and he has been involved in trying to run various services for homeless folks and getting various grants from the community. He was a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I believe, or at least connected with them, a group 20 years ago who actually had the property in which the Homeless Lack of Services Center, a part of it, sits, the Page Smith Community House part. And I may be too focused in the past on these issues, but I remember Daryl Darling being a part of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, who had an agreement with the homeless group of people that was living in what was then called the Back 40, which was a barren field next to what was then called the Homeless Community Resource Center, part of the what is now the Homeless Services, or Lack of Services Center, as I call it, out there at 115 Coral Street. Afterwards, the Page Smith Community House was built on that property. But while the property was vacant, homeless people lived in what's called the Back 40 and stayed there in a sort of a tolerated area. It wasn't officially tolerated, but due to homeless protests and then behind-the-scene dealings with Karen Gillette and then Deputy Chief of Police Dunbow, the homeless people, some of them, were allowed to sleep there in the Back 40 at night without a lot of harassment, is my recollection. This was between the years 1990 and 1995. And there became the encampment got bigger, and it developed tents, and actually an organization developed as well. And what happened was the homeless actually organized and decided they were going to stay there, and they called themselves Save Our Shelter, and there were about 150, 200 people there. And they formed little groups of different folks in different sections of the area, different tents. They had places where they protected their property during the day. And I continue to remind people, no one ever died there. There was drug use, there was alcohol use, there were problems that came up, but it was a pretty much homeless run encampment, although it was somewhat supported in a rather minimal way by Daryl Darling, Paul Lee, Paul Fotenhauer, and Paul Merceau, who were the poverty pimps of their day or the well-intentioned philanthropists of their day. It's a little, I'm a little uncertain as to how to really fairly describe these men and their roles here. But what they finally did was, with the collusion of the city government, it was then run by Mayor Rotkin and Vice Mayor Kennedy. Run is perhaps the wrong word, but they were the mayor and vice mayor. They broke their word to the homeless and drove them out after a large rainstorm. And then what you hear Daryl Darling saying in the service, and you can't because the sound is bad, is how he had helped to provide a place for all the homeless during Christmas 1995, which is simply a straight lie. He did no such thing. He and this community, in order to get rid of the homeless that were there, and maybe to avoid provoking an uprising, because people were not happy with what was being done by the the government, essentially violating, and by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, that had agreed they would not, they would give homeless people a 10-day notice before forcing them to move on, if that's what they were going to do. They claimed they were going to be building on that property, that they had to move people out by January of 1996. But they ended up not building on that property until a year later. So what happened was people eventually, a small number of people were given the option to go to New Brighton Beach. For 2 weeks. And after that, homeless people again had to face the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, the camping ban, and all the other ordinances in Santa Cruz created to pander to the bigotry of real estate folks and merchants and gated community lovers in the Santa Cruz area. So, play some more of this for you. This, again, is audio from the Homeless Lack of Services Center Memorial for Homeless People that was held 2 days ago now. Shortly, you're going to hear the names of homeless folks. Kind of hard to hear, and I apologize for that.
At the same time, amid the information gathering and the frantic search for truth, you found some way to let the body heal itself, the body suffer itself. The law.
Ready to light a candle and.
And I'm skipping some of these speeches.
Expecting to sing loudly, shifting around, perhaps leaving. And again, in a poetry reading, I imagine I see more.
You know, I seem to be having trouble finding these names. I'm hoping that I can get a copy of them and read them on the air if Matt Nathanson will give them up later.
Is it transient?
What
PM 2010?
What I'm going to do now is play for you
last three verses.
Some interviews outside that I did as people began to sing Silent Night, and I'm not a big fan of Christian Christmas carols, or any other religion's Christmas carols. I prefer Green Christmas, as I played earlier.
It's hard to hear this next speaker, so we'll skip it. You missed the last three verses of Silent Night.
Yeah, I got them memorized. That was out here.
And we're listening to Sarah talking with a Bahrainian reporter.
C-O-N, okay. How old are you?
33. And I've been doing this since, what, Peace Camp 2010? I was
doing
a member
that.
Of that, like, being homeless and fighting the right to sleep.
Homeless since 2010?
Yeah. I've been homeless longer, but yeah.
How long?
Off and on for 15 years.
Okay. So, gosh, this is awful. Any idea how many sleeping vacations you have?
I really don't get them anymore. But I would say, in general, all of them together, over 1,000 since 2010.
$1,000?
No, over 1,000 tickets.
Really?
Since 2010.
That would mean you got a ticket every other night. Let's not exaggerate.
No, I'm just saying about. I don't know.
Right. Okay. And you say you just throw them away. Obviously,
I was sending them back in because if you write sheltered full on it, it's supposed to null and void the ticket, but it really doesn't. And so I just throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the cops are nice enough to put, when they put on the address, they put transient instead of your address. And if they can't send you a copy of the form, you don't have to pay it. So
okay.
It's kind of a loophole of them doing the job but not doing the job.
So the lack of failure to pay the tickets has given you bad credit, which means you can't get housing and can't
and
get a job.
Yeah.
Which means that you can't
get off the street.
It's
a very bad catch-22, especially for like people like me. I don't have a record. I haven't really been to jail, so I don't have probation or anything. So I don't get help from probation. I don't have a CPS case, so I don't get help from them either. And so trying to get off the streets is really hard because I have no funding. And it's been a struggle because it's hard to get a job when you're on the streets, especially when the shelter was closed and didn't have showers. And, of course, you have no place to charge your phone, which is, in turn, your alarm clock to wake you up to go to work.
Right.
And then, of course, you can't sleep at night because it's against the law. So it's a catch-22 all the way around.
Yeah.
And it's not working right because they want to get rid of the homeless.
Uh-huh.
For the tourists, because we're a tourist town. What they need to do is make it so we can sleep at night.
Yeah.
So the tourists are out of the way and out of sight, out of mind during the day.
Yeah, right.
And the tourists are here. But no, they're running us out of our camps up in the forest.
Yeah.
And bringing us downtown. Since they cleaned up the Pokemips a couple months ago, we've seen, and closed down the shelter, we've seen a surge of homeless people downtown.
Yeah, right.
More vagrants harassing tourists, more people sleeping in alleys and stuff, and more human feces everywhere. And it's not because we want to use bathroom outside, it's because there are no bathrooms. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, you can't even really use the bathroom downtown, but that's open 24 hours a day because you have people with mental illnesses that go and hide in there at night.
Oh, wow.
And so, and they're not going to leave their stall to let you use the restroom. And a lot of the businesses won't let you use the restroom unless you buy something. And if you don't have money, you can't panhandle. It's okay. Really hard. I've been lucky to know the people I know, and from advocating for homeless and stuff, to be able to help. Like, I get most of my food from leftovers, asking, hey, can you need that? People who are coming out of restaurants and stuff.
Okay.
That's what I get for food, because the shelter don't have food for me. I can't get into the shelter because I don't have a housing voucher or anything like that. And which is wrong because I'm homeless. I'm trying to, the shelter is supposed to be shelter for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's raining right now and I have nowhere to go. Everything I own is wet. And that's stuff I just regained because in the last week I had somebody steal all my stuff, and then I regained some stuff, and then I had the ranger steal all my stuff. Because you're not supposed to stash stuff in the forest or in bushes or anything, and they take it. Or bike walkers. I've lost everything I own because I put stuff with my bike in a bike walker.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly they're supposed to turn it over to the TD and you can pick it up in property. For the last 3 weeks I haven't been going to property Tuesdays and Thursdays, and my property hasn't shown up yet. What happened was the city threw it away. I mean, it's really hard to keep clean clothes and keep up to actually get off the streets. I mean, last week when it was raining, I tried to get some donations from here, like warm socks and stuff. And I was told I was not allowed to get donations here because they're for the clients. I'm like, okay, so the warm clothes are for the people that have housing? That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
And I threw a big fit, and I talked to some administrators, and next thing you know, hey, we got donations.
Oh, good for you.
But
squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah, that's what I've learned over the years. Robert knows me. My ex got 180 days for sleeping back in 2010.
90 days for sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And jail.
And jail.
Wow.
And I was pregnant the whole time. I mean, it's hard. There's people that's in and out of jail. I even tried to go to jail the other day because I didn't want to be in the rain. I was hungry and I wanted to shower. And I couldn't get arrested for the life of me. I tried.
Well, we don't want to accommodate homeless people here.
Well, you know, when you don't want to go to jail, they take you. When you do want to go to jail, they won't.
They're trying to make it as uncomfortable as possible.
But there are some cops out there that are trying to make it. I mean, they're lenient, you know. There's some cops that, you know, are like, hey, you know this is a job. You know the rules. Come on. There's others, you know, I have a tendency of falling asleep while charging my phone at random restaurants.
Okay.
Restaurants. Instead of waking me up, they call the cops.
That's right.
And, yeah, it's really nice to wake up to random cops. Thank God they send a nice one out, usually the same one every time. We have a handful of officers that typically only deal with the homeless.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
I don't think they have an official team name or anything, but
they probably don't. But they probably volunteer for it. I'll bet.
Yeah, they're.
Yeah, I'll talk to her.
We have some really nice ones. We have three that I know of offhand.
That's good to know.
So, one guy and two girls. That I've known for years.
Talk to me about this really quick. This event today, this event for the homeless memorial.
I didn't know that.
No. The homeless memorial, they're having this, like, for homeless people that died while homeless. Just really quick, you know, just because that's what my story is about. You changed my story, by the way, because I'm going to focus on that. But silly question. We both know the answer. Why is it important to have a homeless memorial service?
Because a lot of us don't have families. We are our family. And we can't afford a big memorial or anything. And, you know, it's like a forgotten soul. It's, you know, your best friend died. A forgotten soul. I mean, we have unexplained deaths out here, and we can't get the cops to investigate it, see if it is a murder, even though it really looks like a murder. They say, oh, it's a suicide, mm-hmm. when it's not, just because they're homeless.
Okay.
And it's, we need, you know, if your dad died, you would want a memorial and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of these people, they're just going to get cremated because that's the cheapest thing the county can do, and then thrown in a little paper box and put in a back. Part of the chapel, and they hold it for 90 days and to see if it gets claimed, and after that they throw it in the trash.
It's in the trash, really.
And that's, I mean, I wouldn't want my grandma or grandpa out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, in the last couple of years it's been really sad seeing how many elderly are out here.
Yes.
I mean,
there's a whole list of people in there that were like 80, 90.
Yeah.
Like,
we had a lot. I mean, there's veterans out here. There's guys that's done everything for our country. I mean, real, actual, genuine, that can't get a foot up because they didn't go to the war, or they didn't, you know, for some reason, they're not getting home.
Yeah.
But they're sick. They just had, like, open heart surgery. One guy that's really a good friend of mine, he's elderly and very sick. He was just diagnosed with throat cancer yesterday, on top of him having two open heart surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
He's banned from the shelter because of his attitude, because he doesn't deal with things. He gets frustrated. He cusses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sailor. Go figure. But he's a gentleman. I mean, if half the boys listen to him out here, we would have gentlemen are everywhere. He's a very sweet guy.
Okay.
But he's out here sleeping in the cold. And it's sad. I was raised in a pretty good home. I mean, for my circumstances, most homeless people, they have bad house, bad home lives, bad families, broken homes, drugs, all that. I personally did not come from that. I just economically can't afford a place.
Okay. But economics.
And the cops tell you, well, leave. Go somewhere. I'm like, well, I'm a local. I've lived here most of my life. I mean, a lot of these people, they went to school here. They were born in Dominican. And the cops are telling them to leave because they're homeless, because they can't afford the $2,400 studio apartment in the ghetto. I mean, it's sad. And, you know, there's people's like, well, get a job. Well, you know what? I apply for jobs almost 24 hours a day. I mean, I've applied to work at this shelter over 22 times. And I got 17 denial letters saying I'm overqualified to work here, which is stupid, you know? Because I'm sitting here teaching half the people that work here. Because I've worked outreach in different cities. I've worked in Portland at the homeless shelters and the youth shelters. I worked in Seattle. I've been homeless. And I went to school for it. I have 4 college AAs. But I can't get a job. It sucks. I mean, especially when... I mean, I'm the goody good. I mean, you think you're being good, you get help. No. You had to go commit a crime, get in trouble. And now, I hate to say this, but, you know, drug laws. You can carry a lot more drugs now. So to get a felony, to actually go to jail to get help, you have to... you can't even do that. I mean, it's a catch-22 for some people. And not many. A lot of them don't choose the help that they're offered. I mean, there's a lot of help out there. Like, my friend, she was out here. She was in and out of jail. Broken home, foster care, you know, every odd you can have, she had. And, you know, I sat her down one day, and she got in trouble with the law. She had to do 2 years. She was looking at 5. You know, I talked to the lawyers and the DA, because she's sick. She has 3 different types of cancer. And she's a foster kid and stuff. And I said, hey, you know, give her a break. Let's help her up and not help her down.
Yeah.
And that was 4 years ago. She owns her own house now. She's going to college. She's clean and sober. And she hasn't been in jail in 2 years. That's the longest she's ever been out of jail.
Beautiful
thing. I mean, just because, you know, I'm like, oh, foster care? You know, there's 155 grants out there to get foster homeless people off the street. 99%, about 98% of the kids out here Foster youth.
Uh-huh.
So do they know that program?
No.
Do these people help them? No.
That before. 98% foster youth?
About 98%. And 98% of them did drugs to their parents. And it's stuff blows me away. I mean, I wasn't raised like that. I might have been raised on a Grateful Dead lot, but I wasn't raised like that.
Your thoughts,
Sarah.
And what's your name, reporter?
Todd Gals from the Register of Pomeranian.
And I don't vouch for or validate many of the claims that Sarah makes. I've got no idea about the foster child percentages. I highly doubt it's 98%, but I don't know. She could be right. I've never researched that. Though very few people that I've interviewed have raised the issue of coming from a foster home, although, you know, would they? I don't know. I just skeptical of some of the things she says, but I think a lot of the things she says are quite accurate. And I hope that Todd takes them to heart. He actually wrote an article the next day on that issue, but I mean about his interview and about this situation out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center's memorial. Unfortunately, there was only a very brief blurb about it online, and when I called him, he had just left, and the other reporter she seemed to be ducking when I asked her if she'd send me a copy of the story. I don't know if I want to subscribe to the Register Pomeranian for a year to get the story. But maybe there'll be a copy of it in the library. It's a possibility. By the way, the new Street Spirit has arrived if you are a fan of that newspaper, which has had some stories about Santa Cruz in it. It's a monthly paper sold by homeless people for money. You can find some homeless people in Santa Cruz selling it. And if you want to sell it, you don't have to be homeless to sell it. You can be poor. You can be, you know, anywhere kind of close to homelessness. You can get copies of it at the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. And it has, I'm not sure what their hours are, but they've been opening recently for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, where we have our meetings there every Wednesday. And we've kind of been forced to go elsewhere because they haven't been opening, but now they are, which is very nice in the uncertain weather, particularly with the rainstorms that are due over the weekend. They have a great library of books. The coffee is cheaper than anywhere else in town. And though there's, I've heard criticisms of some aspects of the management. Maybe it's because they've been good to me in the last couple of years. I got a thumbs up for the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's about it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Going to go out on that one. Back again at 9:30. The rest of the Tristia Bauman interview for the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty on Sunday at 10 o'clock, if you want to tune in. It'll also be archived if you miss it or prefer not to or can't. It'll be archived through the HUF website. Or if you want to get more information, you can call me at 831-423-4833. And Freedom Sleepers are going to continue sleeping, apparently. It'll be Freedom Sleep 25 coming up on the 22nd of December. Nope, that was the 22nd that was. It'll be on the 29th of December. And anything you can bring will be helpful. I'll be talking more about that and giving you more reports from the last Freedom Sleep Out, which was on the 22nd, number 24, in the next show, which begins at 9:30 on Sunday, the 27th.
At the airport, flying home to our house Christmas Day. They drove to Preston, manhandled her hoo-ha. They ought to be arrested in TSA. Her metal hip set the alarm off, so they had to pat her down. But they patted her so roughly that her depends underwear fell to the ground. She never felt so violated. And when they ended their attack, there were glove marks on her buttocks and incriminating latex in her crack. Grandma stayed at the airport, flying home to our house Christmas Day. They groped her breast and manhandled her hoo-ha. They ought to be arrested, TSA. They made her take her wooden leg off and remove her purple wig. They confiscated all her prune juice as they rummaged through her luggage like a pig. Now Grandma's cherub-like demeanor